This is Ken Lubin, the host and founder of the Executive Athletes Podcast, and welcome to this week's episode. I want to thank everyone that's been listening and thank you for the comments and feedback. They're awesome and an incredible help in this journey to making this podcast better and better each episode. Once again, this is unscripted and unedited, as I believe it's the best way to get to really know the guest. This week's guest is Joanna Zeiger. Joanna competed as a professional triathlete from 1998 to 2010. She placed fourth in the Sydney Olympics and was a 2008 Ironman 70.3 world champion. She excelled at all three distances in the sport of triathlon, winning races in the Olympic, half Ironman, and Ironman distances. She has Olympic trials qualifiers in three sports: marathon, triathlon, and swimming. We'll get more into that, but that's absolutely amazing. Professionally, Joanna has been a coach and a mentor to endurance athletes of all ages and abilities since 2003. In the past decade, Joanna has helped athletes reach their goals by concentrating on both the physical and mental aspects of training and competing. In 2013, Joanna expanded her coaching business and created Race Ready Coaching, which aims to help athletes achieve their personal best in running, cycling, and triathlon through innovative training plans, multimedia, and education. Academically, while pursuing her athletic dreams, she received her bachelor's in psychology from Brown University. She then went on to Northwestern University to earn her MS in genetic counseling. And motivated by the excitement of independent research, Joanna earned her PhD in genetic epidemiology. So Joanna, you have an amazing background, but we'd love to hear who Joanna really is from the horse's mouth.
Well, I don't even know how to answer that question, but thank you for that lovely introduction. And, you know, I kind of think of myself as a continued work in progress, and while the past certainly shapes us and dictates, you know, what we've done and what we might do, you know, I'm the kind of person that's always looking forward to figure out what's coming next and, you know, how can I make things better for myself and the people that I work with.
Awesome. No, and I think that's it. It's right. It's that self-serving attitude. I think that helps athletes, that helps business people, helps especially coaches and everything else to help people achieve their dream. But how did you get into triathlon? How did you get into doing these types of races? It looks like, I'm sure you are, you know, an amazing athlete as a, you know, as a kid too.
So I started off as a swimmer and I swam through high school and college. I went to my first Olympic trials in the sport of swimming in 1988. Once I was done with swimming collegiately, I just really kind of needed a break from swimming. I had spent a lot of years, you know, going to morning workout. When I was in high school, we had to be in the pool at 4:30 a.m. In college, I swam at 6 a.m. Once my collegiate swimming career was over, I kind of vowed that I was done with morning workouts. And I sort of started to take up running to fill that gap of needing to exercise but wanting something different. But it was only a few months after my last college swim meet that I joined a master's swim team. And guess what? Got back into some morning workouts. Couldn't stay away for too long. And I think all those early mornings just sort of charted my path as being a very early morning person anyway. So when I started my master's swimming, I was still in Providence, Rhode Island. There were some triathletes on the team there and they mentored me and got me into my first race and I was hooked immediately.
Wow.
And after that, it just sort of went from there, you know, started with a sprint race and kind of worked my way up to doing Ironman and you know, progressed. Finally, my biking and running caught up to my swimming skills and was able to compete as a professional for 12 years.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. I actually used to clean the pool at Brown when I was coaching ski racing there. I needed side jobs in order to fund my living in town up on the east side there. So it's an amazing place.
It really is. I haven't been back in quite some time and I know the pool is different now. I really need to get back there and check things out.
Yeah, I took a ride down there not too long ago, and it was amazing to see that whole athletic facility, what's changed and everything else. It doesn't even look the same as it did. Well, now I'm dating myself, but since 20 years ago when I was coaching there, it's crazy, but it looks absolutely beautiful.
Now, one of these days I'll get back there. That place was a relic when I was there.
I think I think they needed an upgrade. But so you've gone to the Olympic trials in three different sports. That is, you know, unreal. You know, where did that focus come from?
Well, I went to my first Olympic trials in 1988, in between the summer of my senior, after I graduated and before I was starting my freshman year of college. And, you know, my entire senior year of high school was dedicated to getting that Olympic trials standard. I qualified in the 200 breaststroke and the 400 IM. And, you know, I had been close for a while and I just kept missing it. And I was just so determined to get that standard. And once I did, it just really opened up for me the possibility of how the mind and body can work together to achieve what you want. And look, I'm not going to say that anybody can do anything because I don't think that's true. We all have our limits. It's just exploring what that upper limit is. I think as a human race, anything is possible, but any individual, you know, we all have our cap. You know, I was never going to be a sub 230 marathoner. That just wasn't my gift. But I tried to really figure out what was absolutely possible, you know, at the very top end reaching and see how far, how close I could get there and how far I could go with my training and using my mind to get through those difficult times. You know, being an athlete, you have a lot of ups and downs. I can't think of any athlete that had a smooth course to their success. It's really, I like to call it like the Rocky Mountains. I'm a Colorado resident and I have been for many years, and you know, it's like the Rocky Mountains. You have a lot of ups and downs, and it's being able to weather those down times that let you achieve success. And any great athlete will tell you that, you know, it's being able to have that determination and that underlying joy in what you're doing and having that belief in yourself. And because I carried all those things with me, I was able to set these goals for myself and most of the time achieve them. You know, I still have some goals unmet, but you know, many of them have been met.
Right, right. No, and that's the most amazing thing, right? Is setting those goals and going after them. And like you said, it's, you know, everyone's sort of born and bred for certain sports. You're not going to, you know, Shaquille O'Neal's not going to win the Kentucky Derby, and a jockey's not going to be playing basketball either, right? You got to look at your physical limits as well.
Exactly. And we all have them. And I think part of the difficult part of being an athlete is really confronting what those limitations are. And yes, it's good to dream big, but you also want to dream realistically. And I think a lot of athletes become disappointed with their career because maybe they overreached on what they think that they should be able to do, and that really just isn't their gift at that time.
Right, right. And how about winning, you know, Ironman, full distance Ironman and Olympics, you know, Olympic level or Olympic distance racing? How did that all come together? You know, they're completely different, you know, different lengths, number one, but I think support different types of racing as well.
So it was interesting that, you know, I excelled in probably my best distance would be the half Ironman. And that probably comes from the fact that I spent so many years doing Olympic distance, which is much shorter, and also training for Ironman, which is much longer. And you sort of put the two together and you end up with that half Ironman. That was sort of my sweet spot. I think my connection with Ironman was more just trying to figure the darn thing out. I had a lot of great Ironman races, but I never felt like I reached my potential in Ironman. I could never figure out the nutritional part of it. And it wasn't until after I retired from triathlon and I got more insights into some of the nutritional issues that I was dealing with when I would race Ironman. I just couldn't get beyond all of that. So I think stubbornness was part of it. And I really enjoyed long distance. I loved the training. I liked doing 5 and 6 hour bike rides. I liked doing 2 to 3 hour runs. So I think that was part of it. And I just had this great capacity for recovery so that I could put in that faster training and put that together with some of that longer stuff, maybe a little bit more easily than some of other people.
Now, are you still competing?
It's a little bit variable at the time. I don't do triathlons anymore. I had a really bad bike accident in 2009 when I was defending my Ironman 70.3 World Championship title. That accident was career ending for me. I did pretty severe damage to my rib cage. And I have chronic pain due to that. I've had 9 surgeries on my chest wall and many other treatments to try and control some of the structural nerve damage that occurred in that accident. So I don't do triathlons anymore because I don't bike and I don't swim. I do run. I actually qualified for 2 Olympic marathon trials subsequent to my accident. But at the moment, I'm going through sort of a down phase with my rib situation. So racing is on hold, but it's always on the table for me. I love to race. You you know, even if I'm not as fast as I once was and my goals are different now, I enjoy the camaraderie of being out there and just being with like-minded people doing something that we all love to do.
Right, right. Now, it's always fun to just toe the line, right? Regardless of what, you know, we all want to win. You want to win. I want to win. We all want to win. But sometimes it's just good to get out there and actually just have fun with it, right? Instead of going like, oh, I got to do this or putting all that undue pressure on and actually just going out and enjoying the scenery or being in the mountains or enjoying the early morning light.
You know, and I think that athletes really lose sight of that, that really what it comes down to is it should be enjoyment. You know, we put a lot of work into our training. It takes a lot to get prepared to go to a race and execute to the best of our ability. So if enjoyment isn't the first part of it, take a break and step back. In fact, I was talking to an athlete yesterday who's doing the Reno Tahoe Relays, long endurance event, and everybody runs these different segments. And she said to me, you know, I'm just really looking forward to getting done with this. And I said to her, why? This is a great opportunity. You know, you're going to be with other people. You're going to have fun. You don't have the pressure of trying to get your marathon qualifying time. You know, this is actually your time to really enjoy because the pressure is so much different. And, you know, she's got some legs that are super hilly and some that are flat and some that are downhill. So this is just a time to really test yourself in a different way. And she thought about that for a second and she realized that, you know, she's trying to skip over something that really is going to be a great experience. And it's so easy to lose sight of that, especially when you're very goal-driven.
It is, right? Because everyone thinks you got to go out and you got to win and you can't really enjoy it. It's like going golfing as well, right? You think you're going to go out and every time I got to shoot a better score than you did last time and just go out and have fun. It's not, we're not going to be professional golfers or at this point be professional runners or any of that type of stuff. And yeah, if the enjoyment's gone, then why do it, right? It's sort of like the Ben and Jerry's thing. If it's not fun, why do it?
Right. And I think that it's unrealistic to expect that you're going to PR at every single race or that you're going to place in a certain spot in your age group at every race. Everybody has off days and we have to allow for that and have that flexibility to know that some days it just isn't there for you. I mean, every time you go out in training, you don't feel amazing. Why would you feel amazing every time you go out and race?
Right. Or go to a work day or go to school day or perform on this test or that test or whatever presentation you're giving as well.
Exactly. We have to be easier on ourselves.
Right. So talk to us about, you know, you do a lot of work in mental toughness. Tell us a little bit about that and what you're doing in that space.
Sure. So in 2017, I think, is that 2 years ago? Yeah. 2017, my book, The Champion Mindset, was published. And I recommend everybody read it, The Champion Mindset, An Athlete's Guide for Mental Toughness. It's available on Amazon. And writing that book was just, it was so much fun. I was so sad when I was done with it because I learned a lot. The book sort of has a flow of three different ways of getting to mental toughness. The first is just my own story of being a novice swimmer and working my way up the ranks to being a collegiate swimmer, then a professional athlete, triathlete, and sort of the ups and downs that you encounter. I did some athlete interviews and also listened to lots of podcasts and read interviews to really see what the words of other champion athletes were and what made them so successful. And then the third thing I did was I went to the literature to find out what research said about mental toughness and how that could be integrated into what some of these athletes were saying. So the book was really just, it was a labor of love. And after the book was finished, I decided to delve into mental toughness just a little bit more deeply. So I initiated a study called the SISU study, and SISU is the Finnish word for grit. It's just a wonderful word. And the goal of that study was to see if I could, if there were mental toughness types, sort of like the Myers-Briggs types, you know. So if you measure different dimensions of mental toughness, can you classify athletes into some kind of mental toughness type? And I wasn't sure how that was going to happen. Were athletes high on some dimensions, low on others? Am I high on all of them? Just wasn't sure. And so the results of the study showed that there were three mental toughness groups. Athletes, on average, fell into either low, moderate, or high mental toughness, meaning on average for the eight dimensions, they either scored low, moderate, or high. And that was actually a little bit surprising to me because I did think that there would be some variability on there. And on the individual level, certainly there is, but you know, for the most part, that's where people fell out. And so as part of that study, I also created an algorithm so that people could take this survey and find out their level of mental toughness. And we can provide that link to people with some of your online material so they can take the survey and find out their mental toughness. And so I also developed a course through Training Peaks. That's the online coaching platform I use to coach my athletes, and created a course that people could take. It's sort of a compendium to the book. And so these are just many different ways that people can learn what mental toughness is. It's a lot broader than we sort of think it is. It's not just suck it up, buttercup. You know, it's a lot deeper than that. And so introducing some of the concepts of mental toughness, and then giving athletes or coaches ways to work on that so that they can improve their levels of mental toughness.
Wow. And so talk to us about the three different levels of mental toughness. Is it, you know, is it innate? Is it learned? Tell us a little, you know, can you tell? Is it just, you know, is it like Myers-Briggs where your test is your test and that's who you are and you can learn to overcome that? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, certainly I think there are some aspects of mental toughness that are innate. Determination probably is one of those things that is more innate than something like self-talk, which is a learned behavior. So yes, there are many aspects of mental toughness that can be improved. Like I just mentioned, self-talk is a learned behavior. And so if somebody is constantly telling themselves negative things and they have this very negative script, that is something that can be changed, you know, with a lot of practice and writing things down and just kind of relearning how to write that script and substituting some of these negative mantras or negative self-affirmations with things that are more positive. Things like visualization, I think, are very important for mental toughness. That's also something that can be taught. Even things like confidence and self-esteem can be changed with the right outlook and doing some things to improve that. So, I think there are many aspects of mental toughness that can be changed. And the nice thing about mental toughness is the brain is infinitely malleable. We can teach it lots and lots of things, whereas physically, we can only do so much before we get hurt or get overtrained. And so for athletes who are struggling to get to that next level, this is one way they can do that, is just working on their mental toughness, and they don't have to train any harder.
And what if you could give someone three keys to working on that mental toughness, what would it be? Or five keys? Or is it that simple, or is it more difficult than that?
Well, I think that there are a few things that I find that are commonalities among athletes. And one of them is just this fear of what other people think. And so people are just constantly, you know, whether they're posting on social media the training they're doing, or their races, or this fear of failure before races because they're worried about what people think about them afterwards. That's a huge concern that people just need to banish. And just don't worry what other people think. As long as you're doing right by yourself and you are an athlete who trains and races with integrity and you're not doing things to hurt other people, that's what really matters. Not whether or not you missed your PR by 10 minutes or 20 minutes or an hour, you had to drop out of your race because you were hypothermic. You know, those things really don't matter to you as a person. So that's one thing, is just, you know, internalize things more and don't worry so much about others. And the other is, I don't love the idea in this concept of expectations. I expect to do this because my training was so good. Or, you know, I expect to win, or I expect to get this Boston Marathon qualifier, or I expect whatever. Because expectations really leave no room for margin of error. And anything can happen on a day. You could get a flat tire. The weather could be terrible. You could just not feel good. And a lot of those things you can salvage. But if you are going to come in way, 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 way below your expectation, that day becomes much harder. So yes, you want to have goals for the day, and maybe you have your A, B, and C goals. And if something goes wrong, maybe you even amend that on the fly. But, you know, it's just a semantic difference that can make, large changes in how you have an outlook for a race. So I think it should be more goals rather than expectation. And then I think the third thing, and something I alluded to a little bit earlier, is don't be your own worst enemy. Don't beat yourself up over things like having this expectation that didn't pan out, or having a terrible race, or going through a slump in training, or maybe you have an injury, or any number of things that we tend to get hard on ourselves for. Be a little bit easier, be nicer to yourself, because if you're not nice to yourself, people will sort of project off of that, and maybe they're not going to be as nice to you. And so, you know, treat yourself kindly and just have this, you know, more positive image of yourself.
Right. No, that's great advice. I know for me personally, you know, just constantly beating myself up, right, based on my performance of what I can and can't do and that type of stuff. And like you said, though, you do have good days, you do have bad days. Just sometimes you have good weeks or bad weeks or good quarters and bad quarters and, you know, year, you know, that can go into a year or whatever, but it's keeping that determination and just sort of, you know, realizing you're human as well.
Right. And things often turn around. But they will only turn around if you have the flexibility and the positive mindset to allow for that to happen. So rather than taking a slump, and you know, you see this in golf all the time where, you know, somebody makes a bad shot and, you know, all of a sudden it just slips away from them and one mistake becomes a terrible round. Whereas if you can manage that in whatever it is that you're doing, you know, you can sort of mitigate that mistake and just cut your losses there. And now all of a sudden things turned around a little more easily.
Right, right. No, that's so true. What about, you know, what do you think about in a longer, you know, in an Ironman, right? A lot of people ask me, you know, what do you think about when you're racing for, you know, a long day or multiple days? I know I always say, you know, everything and nothing. What do you think about when you're racing, and what do you suggest people think about?
I think that is a fantastic summary, everything and nothing. That just really encapsulates it. Because I think that athletes go through the whole gamut of emotions. Like even in a 5K, you can go through the gamut of emotions, right? The first couple of Ks don't hurt that much. And then all of a sudden, you feel like your heart's going to pound out of your chest and you're breathing hard and your legs hurt. Now you're thinking, I can't wait to finish. So, you know, I think that becomes very up and down. So, you know, you might be in the beginning of the race and you're feeling wonderful and you think, wow, this is going to be an amazing day. And a few hours later, maybe you're going through a slump because you need some calories, or maybe you're a little dehydrated. And so I think it's normal to have cyclical emotions, and it's being able to figure out what's causing those emotions. Is it just that I'm a little bit tired, I need to back off? Do I need some food? And so I think that athletes that are able to manage those sort of negative points or those downturns in racing can become very thoughtful about it and do some damage control. But yeah, I mean, yes, there is a whole bit of things that you can go through. But in terms of what athletes should think, I always recommend writing down mantras that you want to say to yourself. And even if you need to, you know, tape it to your bike if you're doing a triathlon, or maybe you want to write it on your hand, because sometimes in the heat of battle, it's hard to remember these positive affirmations that you want to tell yourself. And so I think it's normal to have some negative thoughts, but the athletes that are able to overcome it are the ones who can push those negative thoughts away and replace them with something more positive.
Or just try to turn them off, right? That is a tough thing to do. No, it's
that's hard, difficult. And, you know, you don't necessarily need to turn them off, but maybe you want to sing a song or count your steps if you're running, and just, you know, find an activity that takes your mind off of how uncomfortable you are with your race.
Oh, I know, the whole time when I'm racing long stuff, it's like I'm doing math in my head, pace wise, or how many, you know, how long it's going to take this or take that. And you're always thinking, right? And that it's like, oh, I should be here by this point, here by this point, and here by that point. That's how I do it, to take my mind off a lot of it. But I think it's, you know, it's different for everyone.
It is. And by the way, you know, I don't think it's bad to think, I can't wait to be done. I can't wait to finish. The finish line's just up there. I can't wait to sit down. I can't wait to lie down. Because those are all things that you look forward to that will help propel you, you know, in that forward direction.
Right, right. What about, you know, you personally, right? You're coming back from a pretty, you know, hard injury there. Obviously, it sounds like you've been dealing with it for years and years. How do you push through that? And coming from being a, you know, world champion the year before to crash into then pretty much being out of the game. How does, you know, I'm sure a lot of your research that you've done has been sort of to help that as well, correct?
Well, I don't think the research I've done has been for personal benefit per se. I think that every athlete is confronted, you know, especially professional athletes are confronted with the end of their career. And, you know, at age 49 that I am right now, I wouldn't be racing professionally anymore anyway. I just didn't expect to have such an abrupt end to it. And it's, you know, it's very difficult to confront that. And I went through a mourning period, and my body isn't the same as it used to be anymore. It plagues me every day. I fight with it every day. But ultimately, you know, how do I get through it? I just, I have a zest for life, and I will never stop looking for answers on how to improve my situation. I love to run, which most days I can do in some fashion, you know, some days slower than others, some days it turns into a walk. But, you know, I really try and appreciate the beauty of my surroundings and enjoying time outdoors. And if I'm able to run with friends, the social aspect of it. And it's just kind of coming to terms with my goals as an athlete are different than what they were even a year ago. And, you know, we have to be flexible because as life changes, we change, and we have to be able to change our mind and our mindset with how our bodies are changing.
No, that's amazing. No, I love that. I love that. It's, you know, change your mindset as your body changes. It's, yeah, I think probably most of the people listening here know what their old performances were and what their new performances are, right? The reality of life and of aging is it, you know, that's a tough transition to make as well. But I think more likely, like you were saying, is taking the transition from either college athlete, Olympic athlete, to real life. And I know a lot of people struggle with that. Have you delved into that at all with people making the transition?
I mean, not specifically in terms of working directly with athletes. I mean, you know, having been surrounded by professional athletes for so many years, I see, you know, the difficulties that so many people have. And, you know, being a professional athlete for the most part is a great lifestyle. It's wonderful. You're getting paid to do something that you love to do. And sure, there's some bodily harm that occurs because, you know, you're putting yourself through some physical rigors that could leave a permanent mark. But yeah, I think every athlete has to confront that. And I think because of this difficulty, it's being recognized more in a lot of associations and groups. Like there's something called Athletes for Care, which is a group that is actually helping ease this transition for athletes, because once they're done with their professional sport, they're just sort of left out to dangle. And it's difficult. There's no safety net. And I think that's being more widely recognized now, and things are popping up to help with that transition.
No, I'm sure, you know, it's a tough thing. I've actually been asked her a few times to speak about it, and doing some stuff with Olympic athletes, because my day job is being a recruiter and headhunter and helping people find careers, right? And making that transition is super hard. And it can be, and it's not just athletes. It can be musicians. It can be artists. It can be everything that you're sort of leaving, you know, leaving a piece of you behind, but you need to do it to move forward, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because as you mentioned in the introduction, I have a PhD in epidemiology, and I do a lot of research, but people would always introduce me as Joanna Zeiger, the athlete. And I'm like, when is somebody going to ever introduce me as Joanna Zeiger, the researcher? And, you know, but that was just my identity for so long. And you do become wrapped up in it, even if you have other things that you're doing.
Oh, it's huge, right? That's sort of what you're, you know, that's where your stamp is, or what you know, what you're known as. And I think, you know, people have a hard time shifting that identity. I know, even again, in my recruiting business, I'm putting my professional hat on. It's people going from big company to small company, or vice versa. It's I'm an entrepreneur and I can't work in a big company, or I'm a big company person and I can't work in a small company, that type of stuff. And then people become so focused on what their identity is. Of course, we all have, you know, we all have an identity, but I think, like you said, it shifts throughout life. Your identity now is going to be completely different of what it was when you're 20 or 25 years old, and it's going to be different when you're 75 years old. It's, I think, mm-hmm. like you said, being adaptable and having the ability to flow from, you know, one identity to another is probably just as important of doing that when you're an athlete or you're not an athlete.
Yep.
Perfect. I can't believe we've already pretty much hit the half hour mark here, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but Joanna, where can people find you? Where can they find out more about your research and what you're doing in your book? You mentioned your book's on Amazon, and you know, where can they find you online? Websites, social media, that type of stuff?
They can find me joannazeiger.com, and they can find me at canaresearchgroup.net, canaresearch. group.net, and Race Ready Coaching if anybody's interested in coaching, or they can just email me at joannazeiger@comcast.net. I don't know if you have show notes, but you can put all that information in there as well.
I definitely will. No, I'll put them in the show notes. And Joanna, this was unbelievable. Thank you for being part of this. I'm sure we could go on for hours and hours. So I really appreciate you being part of this program.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
And to anyone who has any questions, comments, concerns, wants to get some more information on Joanna, feel free to reach out to me at ken@executiveathletes.com and make sure you go out there and crush it this week. Talk to you later.